Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the May 23rd edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our guest today will be Elwin Taylor, ag meteorologist from Iowa State University Extension. Our panelists include Dale Durkles of AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Illinois, Scott Harms from Archer Financial Services in Oakland, Illinois, and Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
Let's begin our discussion today, Daryl Durkles, with this question. We posted an outside up week in the July soybeans, 49 cents higher, new contract high. Can you read this particular chart much higher?
I really can't. You know, when you start looking at the beans themselves and you put them in a much broader context and a bigger environment, you still get the picture and get the idea that this is a market that is tired. And even as you look at Friday's market itself, after bursting out to new contract highs on Thursday, we ended up settling below the old contract high we'd set in April on Friday, and it just said there's no follow-through buying up here.
And Scott Harms, your view?
I would tend to agree. I mean, one thing that we saw this week, we did not see a lot of strength in the July-November spread. It did work out a little bit, but it wasn't a real strong leader this week. We may see a squeeze in the July positions at some point, just as we saw last year as we got closer and closer to delivery. But the way the market reacted after breaking into new highs, like Dale points out, I think it indicates that we're closer to the top than breaking out further to the upside.
Any difference of opinion from you, Pete Manhart?
Not really. We roared and backed up, roared and backed up. If you look at the low, I think it was Wednesday, we hit 67.5, and the next day we were 60 to 70 above it, and then we couldn't make new highs and backed off later in the week. So I think we've seen most of it. I think we're going to look at now weather and how much we've actually got coming in from South America and whoever else that we're shipping in because of those prices.
Scott, as you watched the wire services, is there reason to believe that we will be able to make it all the way to the new crop year and still manage to carry in as much as USDA says we will carry in?
Well, I think everyone's watching the residual number. We know that the crush number came out last week. It was the trade reacted somewhat disappointingly to it, but it certainly indicates that the crush is still understated by the USDA. Exports also could very well be understated. But as we move into the stocks report, we'll just have to see if the USDA corrects an error in last year's production to make sure that we'll have enough beans to bridge the gap going forward. So I think they'll solve. We didn't have quite the inverse that we'd seen in historically. We saw last year between the May and the July, before the May went off the board, and I think that indicates that perhaps it's not quite as tight as it was certainly a year ago, and maybe not as quite tight as the market thinks.
To that end, Dale, and I think that end meaning trying to have enough beans left in the marketplace, I believe, but I'm not certain that the price of bean meal at the Gulf and the interior is roughly the same at this point.
It is at this juncture. You know, and the one thing neither of the other two mentioned in regard to this old crop dilemma, you know, and it's something we don't get a regular accounting of, and that's going to be the level of imports coming into the U.S. I know there's some people that are still contending we've got something in excess of a million ton of beans coming into the U.S. Another person I talked to really has an accounting of known shiploads at this point, and beans themselves in particular that's somewhere around 750,000 ton. And you know, we really don't understand these until the wire services report when the ship shows up at a U.S. port, or it's designated when it leaves port either down in Brazil or Argentina. So, you know, that's going to be an ongoing thing. The big thing I worry about in beans, and we'll go back, and you mentioned last year, when we broke last year, it was after the July contract went off the board. August rallied a little bit, and then for no reason, August just collapsed. And that's the issue we're working with this year in the beans again. It's just that one day we're all going to walk in, don't know when, don't know what will cause it, and it may not be a news event. The collapse will start, and there isn't going to be anybody to really chase it and support it up there. The magic thing is trying to figure out what day that occurs, and no one's got that answer.
Okay, so I suspect that most producers will not have many beans left in hand, and they will hold on to whatever they want for however long they want and decide then that'll be fine. It'll be their Vegas beans. But the November new crop is a whole different story, especially as the story you three have written so far. And Pete Manhart, I'm wondering, once we get $12 cash beans for new crop, which I think is trading in a part of the Midwest, is it a place to make sales?
Oh, yeah, I think it is. I mean, we closed them at $12.65 and somewhere in that area. In the Midwest, in the middle of Illinois, you can get 30 under. That's $12.35. Even if you go out to Iowa, I think they're maybe only 50 under. That's $12. And I just don't see much upside, especially with what is perceived as some corn going to beans in the northern territories, and with the weather pattern that's coming, the El Nino, that's supposedly cool, wet weather for the Midwest to grow great beans.
Mr. Harms, are you of the same opinion? New crop sales should be made, and how far along would you be?
Yeah, I think we're definitely getting into an area here where these are great opportunities. I think one thing that a lot of advisory services, a lot of analysts, all of us that kind of watch the trade, have been bearish for a long time since late last year. When you look at the projected new crop carryover, and I think if you look at, we had the USDA release a 330 million bushel carryover just a couple weeks ago. Last year they started at 265 in the month of May. So a similar situation, and by fall, with just a slight decrease in yield, we ended up with 170 million bushel carryover. So I guess I can certainly argue that we don't have to break real hard, at least not down to the levels projected a couple months ago by some in the trade. But I certainly can't argue for us extending gains, and we're within shouting distance of $13. And as Pete points out, a pretty favorable weather pattern. So we may not necessarily see $11 right over very soon, but I'm not sure how long we can sustain these prices.
I think the numbers bantered around may have been $2 below that.
Yeah, that's true.
All the way down to 9. Let's talk about corn for just a bit. Dale Durkles, we broke 7 and 8 cents in the July and December this week, and it has been following wheat futures lower all along. What do you think?
You know, it really has. Wheat has been a key catalyst, but you know, we still have a large enough differential between the wheat and the corn that you know, you don't have this demand in a relationship that really plays into the picture and really ties the two together pretty tightly. So, you know, you got to be a little bit careful looking at that particular situation and that particular circumstance right now. You know, when I look at corn, the one thing I go back to, and having the break here, you know, wasn't necessarily a huge surprise to me, in that we have a 20-week low in the corn market due here at any point in time. And we've brought corn prices back down July and December both, you know, pretty close to some what I'll call pretty important support levels. So I think we're really in a position right now. Planting has gone fast enough. It took away enthusiasm. You had the wheat market break hard. But I think we've taken all that out of the window, and now I think, yeah, we could go down a little further, but I don't think there's a whole lot of downside risk. And what I'm trying to figure out going forward is how much of a rebound can we get out of here?
Scott, do you see a rebound in the marketplace? Do you feel that in Chicago at all coming?
Yeah, we took advantage of this week's break in our futures-only programs and lightened up on short positions and anticipating at least a bounce back to the $5 area or just above. You know, it may be a situation where we just kind of chop around. We still have geopolitical issues. We have an election this weekend in the Ukraine. That factor is still out there. Weather right now seems favorable, but a year ago, we really didn't start to tank the corn market and send it down lower until the later part of June. So I think there'll be some choppiness in this to start the month of June, and we're going to use opportunities back up towards $5 as a hedging opportunity.
And then, Pete Manhart, when you look to the northwest, to the Dakotas, will they move from corn acres to bean acres if possible?
Well, some of them might. Some of them might have all their chemicals and anhydrous and all that on, but you know, we do expect a lot of corn acres not to be planted up there and have acres after March or May 25th just not planted to anything like they have every year. But we do think that in the north there will be a few corn acres go to beans, so that will be less acreage of corn. I don't know. Someone was out today was saying we should be 85% planted on corn next week, which is ahead of the five-year average. And they said that we could plant extra acres due to that and the beans being planted ahead of the five-year average. So most of that, I think, would go to beans, especially in the north. With $12 cash prices, I don't know why they wouldn't do that instead of planting corn that late in the far north. So I think that'll tighten supply a little. I think we've made the big break in corn for now, and maybe we'll be sideways to a hair higher for a while until we get maybe towards that 4th of July break in the summer.
Let's bring Elwin Taylor into our conversation now. Hi, Elwin. Thanks for being with us this afternoon. Will the folks in that northwestern corner of the Corn Belt be able to move next week and finish planting up, do you suppose?
It looks like they will. In fact, things don't look too bad for them at all. Of course, there's been rain in down Texas way, and when rain starts in the Texas Panhandle, it often moves right up to eastern Nebraska and western Iowa. So that's something that didn't show up in the forecast, but it often shows up in reality. So there's still some uncertainty there.
Dale Durkle's a question for Elwin.
You know, Elwin, there's been an awful lot of ongoing talk, and it's gotten more widespread here of recent about the El Nino. How do you see that playing out this year?
Well, all of the indicators, and there are six major ones, have to do with wind and air pressure and sunshine all along the equator. All six of the major indicators point to El Nino, so there's not too much question, at least from history, that it is coming. Now, the real question is when, and it does look like it will be August, September when it does arrive, and then give it 30 days for all of the weather effects to become effective in the Corn Belt area, and there we are into the late season. It will help, perhaps, the soybeans. It will help the forage crops and the alfalfa, but mostly it gives us a positive crop outlook for 2015.
And Scott Harms?
Elwin, we've had several months now of below normal temperatures across the Midwest, and especially in the northern part of the belt. And we are going to add most likely some soybean acres up in the northern part of the belt. We know that the soybeans like heat. And I was wondering if you could comment a little bit on the expected pattern maybe over the next several months in the northern part, especially of the belt, as far as temperatures are concerned.
Well, at least now there is some possibility there that they're looking at. And we're anticipating to get into the second of the week of June above normal temperatures and pretty much all across the center of the nation, and that includes the northern area you're speaking of, and they may be a little bit above normal on chances of precipitation, according to the National Weather Service outlooks. But the warm temperatures this time of year, that's what we look forward to if we want the soybeans to do well. And yes, indeed, the cool temperatures that we had in early May and mid-May really didn't allow in the western portion of the Corn Belt the crop to even get started for corn. Well, then came the nights when the temperature did not fall below 50 degrees, and the soil temperature then averaged well above 50, and things started to happen quickly in the cornfields. And, of course, the beans then would have a chance, and the ones that were planted, I've not been seeing very many reports of them being out of the ground yet. Remember, beans don't keep well in the soil.
And Pete Manhart.
On acreage, are you similar to the USDA on your acres, and do you see anything out there on yields yet as far as being close to USDA on yields?
All I can look at right now is, of course, the yield per acre, and I don't have good information on the number of acres. So I'll just have to go with the USDA. Whether I think they're reasonable or not, I don't have anything to counter them with that has come in that's reasonable other than just hearsay now and then. But as far as the weather conditions for the yields per acre on the beans, it looks like they will stay fairly close to their trend. Well, corn, however, even though the USDA says corn will be above trend just slightly, it looks to me like it will be 4 to 5 bushels above trend. Remember, last year was a great surprise for corn in that everything from Illinois east, every state had a record high yield per acre. And, of course, no state west of Illinois last year had even up to their trend line, up to their average. So it was a real shift as we crossed the Missouri River. Well, I don't think the Missouri River is going to be the factor this year. I think the Continental Divide is. So that will bring wheat into the play as a major grain and reacting differently from the corn and the beans.
Well, let me talk to you just a bit about that wheat, because you mentioned a change in Texas. Is this a longer-term change where they will get rainfall, maybe some of those drought-stricken areas of the Southwest, even California? I don't know. What do you see there?
Well, California is now past their wet season, and so they're in the dry season. So even above average is, still could mean almost nothing, especially in Southern California now as we go into the summer. So let's say that the non-irrigated areas in Southern California are in deep trouble. The irrigated areas are in limited problems, even though things are looking not too bad out there, especially as we overlook the weeks that have been recent. When we look ahead, they don't get precipitation this time of year normally, but we do anticipate by the time you get over to the border with Arizona and Nevada that they may have a little bit above normal chances of having some precipitation there. And I think that that would be the a positive thing for that irrigated area and for the areas with non-irrigated wheat. They might do a little bit better than we expected. But remember, when we go into El Nino, it is not the friend of agriculture outside of the Corn Belt. El Nino is the friend of agriculture in the Corn Belt up in the Northwest and the strong wheat areas. It is not their friend. That would be a real downside, by the way, for a year from now.
How about the Delta region? What's the impact on El Nino there?
It is not as clear there. The main thing that El Nino does is it keeps tropical storms from coming ashore. So let's say that it keeps them out of the flooding that they don't want during the mid-season, in that we just don't expect any hurricanes or even very strong lows from the Gulf of Mexico to come ashore along the Gulf or along the eastern seaboard for that matter as well.
We, of course, are talking with Ellen Taylor. He's at Iowa State University. You're listening to Commodity Week. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason. Now, Jim Angel is here, state climatologist from the Prairie Research Institute, Illinois State Water Survey, with an update of the week's weather forecast.
So far, May temperatures have been near average at 61 degrees and rainfall near average at 2.9 inches. In general, the eastern half of the state has been much wetter than the western half, with rainfall amounts running 4 to 6 inches. On the other hand, some areas between Quincy and Bloomington Normal and another area southeast of St. Louis have seen less than 2 inches of rain in May. There is some concern with the Western Crop Reporting District and the impacts of below-average rainfall on topsoil and subsoil moisture. The National Weather Service forecasts indicate a slow warming trend across Illinois for the next few days. Highs will be in the mid to upper 70s on Saturday, with overnight lows on Sunday in the mid-50s before warming into the 80s. On Memorial Day, lows will be in the mid-60s and highs will be in the mid to upper 80s with a 20 to 30% chance of rain. Tuesday will be warm as well, with highs in the low to mid-80s. Wednesday and Thursday will be a little cooler, with highs in the low 80s. Expected rainfall amounts over the next 7 days are less than an inch across the state, except for slightly higher amounts north of Interstate 80. Looking ahead, wetter than average conditions are expected through June 1st, and warmer than average conditions are expected through at least June 5th.
Our thanks to Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey for his update of the weekly weather forecast. Now here are the settlement prices from the CME Group in Chicago as they changed on the week, Friday to Friday. We'll give you the overnight day trade highs and lows. July corn this week settled at $4.76. It was down 7.25 cents from last Friday's settlement price. The high at $4.82.5, the low at $4.72.5, so a 10-cent trading range for the week. December corn, with a new crop, down 8 cents at $4.73. July soybeans, a $15.36¾ cent settlement price. That's a new contract high. It posted an outside up week with a low at $14.56¼. Settlement price in the July beans at $15.14, up 49 cents on the week. November contract at $12.65¾. Your new crop soybeans 44¼ higher for the week. Bean meal at $5.02.60, up $22.40. Bean oil at $40.38, down 37. Soft red winter wheat, July contract $6.86 the high. Low on the week at $6.51¼. Settlement price at $6.53, down 21¼. And the July soft red $7.45, down 22¾. August live cattle futures 137.12½, outside down, posted a $1.25 loss for the week. August feeders at 192.85 were down 47½ cents, and June lean hogs on the week at $116.85 settled Friday to Friday $2.07½ lower. You, of course, have been listening to Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. This edition of Commodity Week was recorded on the 23rd day of May. Our panelists today include Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities, Scott Harms of Archer Financial Services, and Dale Durkles of AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Illinois. Dale, do you have another question for Elwin Taylor today?
Yeah, is there any other world events in terms of weather climate that's occurring right now that we need to be aware about?
It seems like all that people can pay attention to these days is if it's El Nino or La Nina, and the switchover seems to be the dominant factor, and I think indeed it is. However, looking at an even longer run for the next several years, I think we have re-entered an episode of extremes of weather, meaning extremes of crop yield, particularly in the center of continents. And so that would be the Corn Belt, basically, in the U.S. and some equivalent places, both from Australia into Europe. And these greater variabilities, this is the type of variability that we saw in the 80s, and we didn't see before that or after. Typically, there is a pattern of 18 years of consistent yields, improving, of course, as we improve our genetics and our management of farms. But without the big variability caused by weather, it tends to be 18 years in a row and then 25 years of more erratic crop yields with this high volatility of the weather and the high volatility of the yields. Well, it looks like 2012 was year number one of the 25 erratic years which we would be facing. So we just entered that. If the weather keeps doing what it's done for 300 years here in the U.S., we will have more volatility to work with during the coming years. I have been telling farmers that their risk management practices that they've been doing has been just that, practice for what you'll need during the next few years. And that includes this one and next year, even though I do anticipate above-trend yields for the Corn Belt.
Now, I think this is referred to, at least the 18 years is referred to the Benner cycle. Is the 25-year part of that as well?
It's associated with it, but not quite as directly. The Benner cycle being basically a 22-year cycle that includes several things of ups and downs going around us. And the with all of those ups and downs that we have, with the Benner cycle, meaning droughts tending to be about 19 years apart when we have them, this is a 25-year period of high volatility that probably will include the Benner cycle drought.
All right. Thank you so much for taking the time with us. We do appreciate it, Elwin.
It's always good to be with you. I wish you the very best.
All right. Elwin Taylor is at Iowa State University Extension, located in Ames. Time for a final word from our panelist, Dale Durkles. We'll start with you.
I think in the midst of volatile markets we're seeing these days, it's important people keep great discipline about their marketing strategies.
And Scott Harms.
I would just say whether you're planting, boating, golfing, or grilling this weekend, have fun and be safe and keep in mind the real reason behind Monday's holiday and have a great Memorial Day weekend.
And Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities. Oh, Pete must not be available at that point. Thanks so much for being with us this afternoon. We do thank Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities. He's out of Normal, Illinois. Scott Harms of Archer Financial Services out of Oakland, Illinois. And, of course, to Dale Durkles. He's with AgriVisor from Bloomington, Illinois. You can always listen to our program anytime you like. In fact, all of our agricultural programming at WILLAG.org. That's WILLAG.org. There you'll find everything from the opening market report to the closing market report on a daily basis, agricultural and weather and markets at WILL from Illinois Public Media. You have a great afternoon, a very, very good Memorial Day weekend. Thank you so much for listening. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.